On this episode, we discuss chaos walking.
And joining us as a special guest, Mr. Chaos Walken himself, Christopher Walken. How are you doing, Christopher? Having a great time, Stuart.
So is he a robot?
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Oh, hey there, Dan. It's me, Stuart Wellington, back again.
And also back again, I don't know why Stuart got to the back again credit, but I'm also back again, and so is Dan, is Elliot Kalin, me. We're all back again. That's right.
Yeah, we all saw the recording listed on our calendars, and mm-hmm. we clicked the link for the Zoom meeting, and we're back again.
So now we're back again. Detective Muldoon back again. Uh-oh, we were trying to get out of the detective job, but we got pulled back in for one last case. That's right, back again is back again in back again.
This fall on NBC, every episode, he's back again. He keeps trying to quit, but they won't let him.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Nathan Fillion as back again.
Oh, man.
But it's the three of us in a trench coat and with a Nathan Fillion mask on top. Yeah.
Nathan Fillion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. We're Nathan Fillion, which is the substitute Nathan Fillion.
Well, we haven't missed a beat. Okay, well, this is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and we talk about it. And for this episode, we all watched a film that... did this get released to theaters or was this...
I believe, released in theaters, but let me double check that. I have a friend named Wikipedia, and let's take a look what he says about it.
Yeah, this is one of those ones that was meant to be a much bigger release, though.
It was released on March 5th, 2021 in the United States, and previously on February 24th in South Korea. Was previously scheduled to be released in 2019, but was delayed to accommodate reshoots. That was a bad idea because then they scheduled it during the pandemic and it was delayed yet again. Yeah. But it's back again.
Well, they were doing reshoots for like 2 or 3 years, right? I think they started reshooting it back in like 2017.
They actually began reshoots before they began shoots. That was the troubled production of the movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this has been through a lot of... I mean, let's just talk about it. This movie's called Chaos Walking. There's been... So... Charlie Kaufman wrote the original screenplay for this a long time ago. I presume that much of that has been, or most of it, if not all, has been thrown out because he does not receive any guild credit for it.
It's originally based on a young adult novel.
It was published back in 2008.
Yeah, and then he probably adapted it first, and then a little enough is used of that he receives no on-screen credit.
Since it was published back in 2008, do you think that like the publisher's like, well, there's this hot new bad movie podcast called The Flophouse out there. Maybe if this does well, we can make a movie.
Someday.
Yeah.
Someday.
And with every delay, they kept being like, we just got to hope they keep doing the podcast. We got to hope against hope these three knuckleheads continue for over a decade to keep doing this dumb podcast.
Nothing better to do.
Nothing, apparently. But Doug Liman is the director, but the reshoots, I believe, were done by also Fede Alvarez, who did the Evil Dead remake and Don't Breathe. And, you know, Doug Liman, obviously, of Bourne Identity, Swingers, Go, Edge of Tomorrow. You got big stars in this, like Daisy Ridley, Tom Holland, Mads Mikkelsen. We're mad about Mads. Mm-hmm. A lot of talent.
I can't believe you mentioned Mads third.
At this film. Well, I mean, he is, I would say... third lead.
He's the lead villain, though.
And David Oyelowo, who is a Oscar nominee. Did he win?
Did he win for Selma?
He did not win, I don't think. For Selma, you mean? I think he did not win that year. But this is a movie that...
And Cynthia Erivo, it's crazy.
Yeah,
that's true. Although her part is very small.
Cavalcade of talent.
Now, there's a lot of talented people. It's got a great pedigree. And yet, something doesn't quite work. Is this movie... chaos walking, or is it merely chaos boring? That's a question we'll answer today on the Flophouse. But first,
do you
want to
take another pass at that one, Elliot?
Oh, okay. Is is this chaos walking going to get a chaos drubbing from the Flophouse Boys? First, a word from Syrup. Hey, what are you putting on your pancakes? Syrup? What's going on with you? Put syrup on those pancakes.
That is a huge new sponsor we got. The idea of syrup.
Yeah, yeah, it's for the National Syrup Council. Unfortunately, the nation that it's the Syrup Council of is North Korea. So, hey, North Koreans, what are you putting on your pancakes? You don't have any pancakes? That's terrible. What a tasteless joke for me to make. Okay, guys, let's keep going with the episode.
Wow. Okay. And we're going on.
Stuart, you want to take us through this movie? What's it about?
Because
the title doesn't really tell you very much.
So when you obviously you're at the movie theater, you have your tub of popcorn, and you're like, what the fuck is this movie going to be about? It's called
firmly ensconced in it, warm and buttery.
Yep, and you're like, I hope nobody hears my thoughts because that doesn't happen in real life. So the movie opens with a title card that is a quote that sheds a little light on the title. The quote is, wait, I wrote it down wrong in my notes because I didn't want to rewind, but I have it here on my phone. I'm just going to vamp for a second. So what's up with you, Elliot?
Is that you vamping? I think that's...
I'm back in the game. Okay, so the title card
reads... The audience
reads,
will never know what's up with me. Yeah.
The noise is a man's thoughts unfiltered, and without a filter, a man is just chaos walking. And you're like, you read that and you're like, oh, okay, so somebody famous said that. Nope. It is attributed to unknown New World settler, a character made up for the movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
And at first you see that quote and you're like, oh, he's talking about Twitter. Okay, yeah, sure.
Oh, man, who put it? Man, we're all wound up today. So the movie opens in outer space. Perfect.
it is a perfect place for a movie to end.
I mean, if you expand the definition far enough, every movie opens in outer space because it's all on planets.
That's true. Elliot got me again. So the movie begins in outer space. We fly onto, we get closer to the planet. The card reads that it is the New World 2257, so right around the corner.
Yep, and this planet has been given the imaginative name of New World.
New World.
I guess because the colonists in their generations-long voyage over here were watching nothing but New Girl, and that was all that they thought of. And they said to honor the sitcom that so entertained them during the many decades of space travel, they named it after that, I'm guessing.
And, I mean, I think the wish is that the men in this movie behaved a little bit more like Nick and a little less like Schmidt. But we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. So we're introduced to Todd Hewitt, who's just hunting around in the forest with his dog, Manchi. He kills some giant bugs. And the whole time we are hearing constant narration from him. But it turns out that's not just narration. That's his thoughts. On this planet, human men, their thoughts are heard aloud, and their head emits like illusions,
sort of a
purpley
vapor,
like a corona.
It's like a holographic cloud that follows men around and allows you to see their thoughts. And this is Tom Holland, who's playing Todd Hewitt. And he's really breaking normal form here by playing kind of like a nervous, young, anxious, nebbish guy who is always kind of telling himself he's saying the wrong thing and is constantly second guessing himself. And
it's true.
I'm just going to jump in and say that one of the things you figure out right away is that this movie is not doing they're not doing a fantastic job of representing at least what it is like to me to think, because most of the thoughts that you hear are just him stating what's going on or reacting immediately in full sentences to things. And he very rarely he doesn't have a stream of consciousness so much. It's more like he has like Joel and the bots are in his brain just kind of commenting on things that happen around him.
Right. You know? I do not presume to be inside other people's minds. I know that many
So not
people...
like the Danzig song Possession, which is entirely about that.
But many
or
people
the
like,
character Mastermind
think in different ways. But I know that my thoughts are more in the vein of sort of a constant inner monologue rather than sort of like, you know, later on he like sees Daisy Ridley and he's like, yellow hair, pretty girl. Like it's all like just like little phrases.
Yeah. It's like the dogs from Up.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody. Yeah, I mean, and in a way, men are basically the dogs from Up, but they're walking on two legs. But yeah, it's a very – so keep in mind when we're talking about his thoughts, it's very like it doesn't fit. The most accurate thing about thoughts that came to me during the movie was there's a scene later on where an old man is sleeping and he's just having dreams about baseball that are very loud. And I was like, I buy that. Yeah, okay, this I buy, you know.
So we're introduced to this. We're introduced to this little world. He lives in a like a settlement that is. I haven't checked, but I think comic artist Simon Roy deserves royalties for this because it's this like kind of you know kind of futuristic, but also like kind of like Old West. It's this colony that's made up entirely of men. We're introduced to this like super intense preacher character played by David Oyelowo, whose name I'm sure I'm butchering at this point. We are introduced to Nick Jonas, who is doing a really good job of playing an unlikable person. I mean, it must be such a huge stretch for him, but he manages to pull it off perfectly.
Wow. I don't know enough about Nick Jonas to know if that's a solid dig or not.
Wait, what do you mean a dig, Elliot? I'm saying this honestly. I don't know what's wrong with you. Can you see my thoughts today? What's going on?
He is playing like a very stereotypical, though, like just like this is the bad guy who is a like, you know, an idiot, probable sexual assaulter. Speaking of which, content warning, there's a lot in this movie like about violence against women. Multiple animals die. We will be talking.
So many horses die, I was like, they're really leaning into the walking part of this title.
Yeah, but it is funny, like, Audrey has gotten me into
shaking
the voice.
My head. Shaking my head. So, I'm the guy who made the joke about how North Koreans suffer from famine, and I'm shaking my head at that one, too.
Yeah.
Watching Nick Jonas, in this role is very, very strange. It's like, wait, you're supposed to be, like, you know, telling some young artist some bullshit that makes it seem like you care about saving them from America's wrath as a singer rather than wearing a big duster and licking your lips ominously.
He does lick his lips a lot. And also we meet Nick Jonas's father in this movie, who is the mayor of the town, Mads Mikkelsen. We love him. Flophouse fave here.
He's the mayor, but his name is David Prentice, and the town is called Prentice Town.
David Prentice, which is one of those great sci-fi names that you just love. Like, George Lucas must have written that down and been like, how did I miss that one?
Oh, man. Perfect. Oh, man.
And the mayor is kind of, he has this, he's almost like a father figure role model for our hero, for a brief period of time before we realize he's the baddie.
You realize he's a bad guy long before Tom Holland realizes.
Yeah, he's played by Mads Mikkelsen, and he's got a big scar in his
and he wears a cool coat.
And he says to Tom Holland, men need to kill, and gives him a knife. Like, so you know he's a bad guy almost instantly, you know. But Tom Holland takes a long time to figure that out.
So Todd lives on a beet farm with his two adoptive fathers, played by Kurt Suther and returning Flophouse fave, Damien Bashir. Hey,
so close,
how you doing?
Yeah.
Oh man, we got so many names in this movie. So he, he wanders around a bunch. We learn a little bit about the town, and then of course, now we go into outer space where Daisy Ridley from the Star Wars movies comes from, and she is.
Well, I don't know if Daisy Ridley comes from space, other than again in the
check
larger
the tape,
sense. Stan,
she's always in space.
She's got the same accent as all the people from space in the movies, so that's a space
true.
Accent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's on like a landing pod, and they are heading toward the planet. We learn that the colony has been cut off from the rest of humanity for some time. That they were late in arriving, and this pod is landing. And as it gets through the atmosphere, this like energy wave hits the pod, and all the men start experiencing the noise, which is when they're. Did I address that? It's called the noise. The noise.
Yeah, it's
is
called
when,
the. Yeah, in the opening quote, it's called the noise. And now you maybe think that don't. Now it's not as bad as if they were affected by the noid, which would ruin all their pizzas. Mm-hmm. Instead, this merely makes their thoughts come out loud, and they get disoriented and crash their spaceship.
Elliot, this is why. I mean, there are many reasons why we're friends, but before you said that, I in my head was thinking. Avoids the noise? Is that anything?
That's something, yeah. Let's work on it.
Dan, you can make up for it, but I've been trying in my head to figure out a Ridley Walker, Daisy Ridley, chaos walking joke, and I cannot figure out the math on it. So maybe you can pick that
one
up.
Well, you know, let's open it up to the listeners. If there's any scientists in the audience who can make that work, You know,
make this joke. It's like in Apollo 13 when they put all the pieces out and they're like, we need to make this fit in this. Here are your pieces. Daisy Ridley, Chaos Walking, Ridley Walker by Russell Hoban. Those are the pieces you have. Just figure out a joke to make out of it. There's plot similarities. Just see if you can get it done.
So this this pod quietly crashes in the forest behind Todd's farm.
Yes, it is quietly crashing.
Yep.
Well, and it raises a question, because it does crash quietly, and it asks the question, if a space pod crashes in the woods and there's no one around to hear it, does it make a noise?
I don't know.
It did make the noise. I mean, it made the noise, because that's what crashed them, but yeah.
Yep, you got me. I didn't realize you were doing trick questions now, Elliot.
It is. So, you guys, have you seen that movie Noisies? It's the musical about the young guys who start a union about noise.
I mean, you know,
or the sequel Noisies Off.
There is power in a union. Noisies specifically Off. Decibel power. The more people who can yell together, the louder they'll be.
Hey, when you got 100 voices singing, who can hear a lousy whistle blow? That's from Newsies.
Okay. So Todd thinks he... Yeah. So do you want... Okay, well, it's done. So Todd thinks he's chasing a thief, of course. Instead, he finds the crash shuttle. He goes to town. Yep.
Sorry.
Sure, yeah.
Did this bother you? Because it bothered me. So Daisy Ridley is part of this second wave of colonists that they, you know, like, they're like, oh, they must be excited that we're coming. You know, it's been so long. We should have been here much earlier. And she crashes. And the first thing she does is, like, sneak into town, like, steal something and then run away from the person.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't she, like, walk straight to town and just ask for help? Like,
well, this is something that bothered me that I want to talk about. Yes, which is that. We know she can talk. We know she can pilot a spaceship. But as soon as she lands on the planet, she is suddenly Nell, or what's her name from the Fifth Element. Suddenly she is refused. She doesn't want to talk.
Lulu Multipass.
Yeah, thank you. Lulu Multipass. You use her to get on certain toll booths. And so to get through the highway parts. So it's like suddenly she is acting like one of these like alien or, you know, savage women that you see in movies who is like, there was a video I watched a while ago online about it where the guy refers to it as Born Sexy Yesterday, where they're like sexy women that a man has to kind of teach how to civilization, basically, how to talk. And she starts acting like this, and it's very weird. So she's in a barn later, and Tom Holland is like, it's okay, it's okay. Like, I'm not going to hurt you, I'm not going to hurt you. And she's like, huh. And it's like, but I don't understand why she's not just talking to him and saying, what's going on here? I came with the other settlers. It's very strange. It doesn't really
It feels like there's a scene missing where she had, like, a very negative early encounter with some settlers or something.
Or gets hit on the head and is disoriented.
Or, like, a coconut falls from a tree, hits her on the head.
It's this new world, all it seems to have is beets and coconuts. And I don't
know.
It's
giant bugs.
And big bugs. Yeah, and an alien race that we see once and then never again.
Uh-huh. You know, Todd goes, they round up a posse, they go looking for her, they eventually catch her, right? And, Mads Mikkelsen takes her back to the colony, and he starts to, he isolates her and tries to explain to her what's going on. You know, he explains what the noise is all about. He explains about the evil aliens, the Spackle, who came and killed all their women one day.
But filled all the holes in the walls.
Yeah.
So that was good.
It does.
There was a moment where he refers to the aliens as being called the Spackle, and I could see him, I could see the struggle there. Like, that's a silly thing to have to say. But he pulled it off. He's amazing. Yeah.
An odd name for your potentially menacing alien creatures.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Why are they called that? Well, we never find out.
No.
We don't find out much about them.
No, the Spackle are an underdefined element in this scenario.
I mean, she is immediately suspicious of them. Because
she's talking to Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, she's talking to Mads Mikkelsen, who is... is fairly scary looking, and I think it's funny that he was in Death Stranding recently, which is basically a game that could have been called Chaos Walking. But and she's in like a barn surrounded by men who are all shouting with their thoughts. So I could understand why she would be a little nervous. So of course the mayor leaves his son alone with her. He gets super weird, and then he somehow sets off a device that blows up a bunch of stuff, and she escapes. And overhears Mads Mikkelsen's real plan, which is, of course, wait for a new ship of colonists to arrive, bonk them all on the head with coconuts, and take their ship.
Yeah. I mean, I think kill them. I don't know that it's just going to be a bonking. But
I mean, do they clarify Eliot? I mean, it's kind of the same thing. So
maybe they don't. But he sees these new colonists as a threat to his power because he seems to have some sort of horrible secret that is, mm-hmm. I wouldn't go ahead to say incredibly obvious, but certainly very obvious. But
yeah.
And it makes me wonder, and here's an issue, and I assume this is not to get into some kind of critical gender theory, but it feels like this story is built around a very old-fashioned structure of there's a young guy, he encounters someone from the outside, and that opens his eyes to the problems of the place that he's living in. When I don't know why you don't just tell the story about Daisy Ridley. Like, I don't know why you don't just make her the hero of this story, because she's the one who's totally out of her element and would not have a reason to have suspected these secrets before. Like, I don't know why we're still holding on to this old-fashioned framework of you need a young guy to be your entry point into this story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, not much of a spoiler, because we are going to talk about the whole damn movie. But, like, this movie, in so much as it has something on its mind, seems to have on its mind, like, the male capacity for violence. The way that the idea of being a man, you know, gets equated to being violent, because
that song,
you know,
in Mulan.
Tom Holland keeps telling himself in his noise, like, you know, be a man, be brave, be a man, like, and that is linked to Mads being like, a man needs to kill sometimes, you know, and him learning, like, no, killing everything is not the answer. Like, that you should not look on this as, I don't know, like, to argue that, like, what we hold as masculine is toxic, to put it in the language of our time, and so maybe they thought that they need to center a man learning that lesson, and maybe, like, a Trojan horse that message in for maybe men who are looking for an adventure story, but it does seem a little weird. Like, I mean, the story at this time seems a little weird for the reason of, yeah, like, should the guy be the main hero? And also, like, it is so tied to the idea of gender being a binary that it opens up problems that it does not address at all. But,
well, that's a whole other issue. But it feels like it's the Margaret Atwood quote that you see all the time, where it says, men are afraid women will laugh at them. Women are afraid men will kill them. That is like, it's, this is kind of like, men are afraid women will laugh at them. Women are afraid men will kill them. The movie. Like, that's kind of like, it's like someone took that quote and was like, I better build a movie around that. And,
they did
a lot of,
somehow they did it.
And they did. So, and they made it happen. I couldn't make this damn Ridley Walker joke work. Anyway, I can't figure it out, but they were able to make a movie out of this quote.
So, I mean, if you can make a boy out of pencils, then pencils can take
they
some
didn't
leaves.
Make a, I don't remember they make a boy out of the pencils. I think you might be misremembering what happened in that movie.
and speaking,
like,
of boys,
if you can make if you can make butter out of peanuts, then maybe we can make a peanut out of butterballs. I don't know.
And speaking of peanuts and balls, let's talk about a beet farm. That's right. Yeah. That's the farm that Todd lives at, and Daisy Ridley's character, who we later learn is named Viola, has hidden out in his barn.
There's a lot of talk about beets in this movie. I haven't heard this one.
Do you think that's a 12th Night reference, the fact that she's named Viola?
Yeah, maybe. I think it is. Or, I haven't heard this much about beets since the Doug TV show.
Oh, man, you got
nice.
It. You got
I'm
it.
Sorry I interrupted that.
Thank you. Well, that was a joke for my generation, the Nicktoons generation. Anyway, continue. Gen Z, do not apply to that joke.
Yeah,
don't worry
wow.
about it.
Uh-huh. They'll probably reboot it. So they decide, and Todd decides to protect her. He informs his two dads that he is that, you know, that she's there, because he can't hide any information because all his thoughts are writ out in the sky. So they his father, played by Damian Bashir, Ben, explains that they got to get her out of there, and he has to go with her. And their only choice is to go to a place called Far Branch, which has there's some, like, dark mystery tied in there where he can't reveal that he's from Prentice Town, which turns out Prentice Town's pretty shitty. I think we can all agree Prentice Town.
It just turns out that Prentice Town has a bad reputation because they're terrible.
terrible.
They killed a lot of people.
They take baths with their clothes on, and they've never taken a hot one before. Like,
and they're not very. They're not, maybe Todd is not the best example of this. They're not very. observant, because there's a part where, and this shows to me that they weren't paying super close attention to the writing when they cast the movie afterward, or not rewriting the movie for the cast, because when he finally hears Viola talk, he goes, her voice is high, kind of nice. And I was like, she has a deeper voice than you.
I know. Like, I wrote that in my notes.
it bothered me so much, because it was like, this is probably a line, maybe it's in the original book, and it's carried through all this time, and nobody at any point was like, you know, Tom Holland's voice is higher than Daisy Ridley's. Like, we should probably change that line.
Do you think they suggested it to Tom Holland? He's like, what are you talking about?
He's like, did you mean I should start talking like this throughout the movie?
Well, it's just me, a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
And they're like, yeah, and they're like, we've already shot half the movie with his high voice. We can't do this now.
But there must be an alternate cut that's on the DVD of him being like, hey, let me take you to Far Branch.
So before they can leave, the Prentice Town posse shows up, and they have to escape in a hail of blaster fire. His father, Killian, is killed by evil Nick Jonas, but they get out of there. They're chased by other guys on horses. And another cardinal sin of the movie, he rides his horse off a cliff, and his horse breaks his leg, and he has to kill it, and it sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. Movie, you suck.
I was like, what is this, The Revenant?
Yeah. Todd and Viola form...
I mean, Stuart, I hope you know they didn't really kill a horse making the movie, I'm sure.
No, I mean, I checked the credits, and it didn't say... They said they didn't kill a horse, so okay. I got to assume.
It didn't say
the
end dedicated to the memory of Sparkles or anything like that.
Uh-huh. The horse's name was Whiskey. So they form... Todd and Viola form kind of an uneasy alliance, because they got to get to Far Branch so she can... call out to like the ship that her shuttle came from and tell them
say,
not to arrive.
Feet,
watch
don't
out, danger.
Fail me around. Turn around.
Just yeah, pick
get
me up
out
first.
Of here. I'm a
pick
celebrity. Me. Get me out of here, she says. Yeah. I was in Star Wars.
Uh-huh. But she can't go on her own because Todd, the only map Todd has is his memory of a map. And I'm like, I don't remember. I have a pretty good spatial memory, and I couldn't remember a map perfectly, but whatever. So we get like a bunch of scenes of questing, you know, they're like walking around different areas. We find out that it doesn't really ever get dark there. They go through swamps.
You get the classic scene of the man stripping off his clothes to like jump in some water and her like looking at him and then looking away and then looking at him again, just like in Pacific Rim, basically. Uh-huh.
Or like that X-Men comic where Jubilee and Boom Boom see Wolverine naked and then they like lose their shit.
I don't think I've read that one.
It's crazy. No, it was a real comic. Like, okay. Wolverine's meditate. I've talked about this on the podcast before. Longtime fans are going to be like just quoting this verbatim. Mm-hmm. But Wolverine is doing like, you know, like a nude meditation thing because he's, you know, like a badass. And Boom Boom and Jubilee go to grab him because, I don't know, they have to go have a meeting or something. That's what the X-Men do. And so Wolverine like gets up and walks past them, and there is a panel of both Jubilee and Boom Boom like looking down at Wolverine's naked body as he walks past, and then like a shot of them like with sweat bubbles shooting out of their head.
Yeah, they
like,
do. They do the anime horny face with their eyes crossed.
Exactly.
And everything.
Yeah, it's wild. It real comic canon. Somebody'll email you the panels, Dan. And
great,
you'll,
thanks. Yeah, I'll add it to my files. Yeah. I'll put it in my filing cabinet.
Add it to your Wolverine Thirst files. Yeah.
Yeah, print it off.
Wolverine, comma, girls thirsting over.
Yeah, put it, tag it, and then print it out. Put it on your wall. Put a piece of red yarn between that and I don't know.
Chaos
I don't,
walking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have a lot of they have a lot of chatting about who the real aliens are. Humans are the spackle. We learn a little bit about Viola's background, about how she's been on this colony ship her whole life. She's never seen rain before. This planet sucks.
Did we mention already that Mads Mikkelsen, the story at Prentice Town is always that the spackle killed all the women in the town.
That's important.
When Tom Holland was a baby, the spackle arrived and killed all the women in town, including his mom. And all he remembers is a song she sang to him when he was a wee bab.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But he can conjure that image up whenever he wants. So it's basically she's still alive, right?
I mean, it's one of those things where like, I'm like, I know how kids' memory works and my memory of being a child work. He is remembering the story his dad told him about that song. There's no way his memory is that clear from when he's like a little
baby. Well, especially because he is remembering it from a
from like, another outside
viewpoint
vantage point
outside of yes, like rather than like maybe fuzzy images of like blurry mom face.
Yeah, like his memory would be his dad's face telling him the story, and maybe his dad would be conjuring some shit at the same time.
So maybe actually, cool. You know what? That's what it is. It's a memory of seeing his dad remembering it. From his head. We fixed the plot hole. It's not a plot hole. He's remembering.
We spackled that one up.
He's remembering his dad's noise. Yeah, call it. Don't call the spackle. We did it already. We don't need them to fill that one in.
And there's a moment where Tom Holland is obviously infatuated with Daisy Ridley's character, and he even has like an imaginary makeout session with her, which is creepy and would be creepy if that happened. So
I think the
noise power.
No, I think the way the movie handles it is I don't like that there's a it's kind of a fake out where she kisses him.
I don't think
him.
The movie handles that wrong.
I don't. Well, she kisses him, and then we learn that it was actually a noise image, but. The way he does it is not creepy. He's a young guy. Guys have those thoughts. It's not like he's not creeping on her, and the movie is making it clear like that's an embarrassing thought for someone to see. Yes. So I don't think it wasn't that creepy, you know?
I mean, I'm just creepy in the sense that I think all teenage boys are creepy, and to imagine seeing all their thoughts would be horrifying.
Yeah, well, that's the point of the movie is men's thoughts are horrifying, and we shouldn't see them ever.
Yes, exactly. That is the mission statement of the film.
And why do I got to see it in a movie? I had a whole season or so of Herman's Head to watch.
Yeah.
Well, so, were the four people in Herman's Head? There was lust, mm-hmm. someone else, another uh-huh. thing, and I don't mm-hmm. remember what the other thing was.
There's the big like a slob. Nerdy guy. There's a big slobby party guy.
Was there a lady?
There's like the hippie lady, and then there's one other one that I forget.
Maybe more Yeardley like a Smith was not in the head. Yeardley Smith was the secretary where he worked, right?
I believe that is true. I believe that.
I guess I'm going to have to go back and review Herman's Head. I don't really remember it that well.
Going to get more emails after this episode because of that. So
head, comma Herman's. Mm-hmm.
So they find a spackle village, and they try to avoid it. And then they, of course, get attacked by a spackle dude who kind of looks like a tall, muscular gray alien, but like all like I don't know, like oily.
And it's only got one arm.
And it's only got one arm, but I don't know his whole story. Maybe they all have only one arm, or maybe he, like
it looks
know.
Like it was maybe you know they in a conflict between the spackle and these colonists.
Maybe you kind of have to read that into it. It's another one of these things. I remember like with Cowboys and Aliens, where it was like this is an intelligent, sentient alien being, but because it is not human, it wears no clothes and looks like a monster and acts like a monster. You know, doesn't attempt to communicate, doesn't move or act like it's thinking. You know, it's just.
But it does have the noise around its head, and it seems put off by the fact that Daisy Ridley's character does not have the noise.
Yeah,
because at first he starts beating the crap out of Tom Holland, and then Tom Holland starts knifing it. And it's pretty brutal. And then Daisy Viola convinces him to not kill the Spackle, who then just leaves. And then that story's done. But he learned that you can't just kill everything, which is a very important lesson to learn if you're running around with a fucking knife.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, of course, shortly after, they find another settlement. That's right. We get to Far Branch, and it's way nicer. Like, they have all kinds of animals. It's clean.
Hanging around, playing music.
It's great. There's men and women and kids. It looks much nicer.
The mayor is a woman, which really throws off Tom.
Yeah, played by Cynthia Erivo. She's great. And then, of course, Ray McKinnon shows up, and I'm like, that's what this movie needed. It's like a Western. Ray McKinnon's in every fucking Western now, right?
Yeah. It is very much like a Western, I mean, which makes sense because it's a movie about colonists. And I just want to, you know, in the interest of saying some things I liked about the movie, I think that the look of the movie I enjoyed. Doug Liman, I think, in general, is good at providing something with a stylish look without being aggressive about it, without being like stylish in quotes where it all has to be assaultive. Like this alien world looks different enough to seem like, you know, it's another like unpleasant to live in for humans planet, but it is basically also just a physical space that looks not unlike Earth. It just looks like a frontier somewhere.
Yeah.
And I liked that.
I would say the only real design misstep is the aliens themselves, which are as you said,
kinda
very
generic.
Bland. Yeah. But everything else, like I like the mixture of high tech, low tech stuff. And there's some pretty shots. Like, it's like, I like pretty wilderness shots.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's hard to look at greenery and forests and not find it pleasant, you know.
It feels tactile. It doesn't feel like it's all on a green screen.
They do a good job with the design of it looking like a place where people with technology showed up and then had to make do either with what they had brought with them or building new things that they didn't have all the resources for. And like, it looks like a place that started with technology and has had to fill in the gaps of what they didn't have.
And the amount of work for the visual artists to be going in there and adding those, like, the noise to every man in a shot, like, that's very impressive.
It is so much, you know, I don't think the movie's totally successful, but they do so much, it's so much more worthwhile, the work they're putting it in, than in the Aquaman movie, per se, where they must have had hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of digital artists making their hair and capes look like they were waving in water. Yeah. And I was like, this is a real waste of... I mean, I'm glad people got paid to do this work, but this is a real waste of effort when this whole movie could have been set on land just as easily, you know? But instead, everyone's hair had to be constantly waving.
I would argue the premise of an Aquaman movie.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm questioning...
What are they going to call him, landlord?
I guess I'm questioning the premise of making an Aquaman movie in the first place. I guess that's what it really comes down to. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see.
I wanted to mention that, Stuart, yes, Ray McKinnon does have to be in every Western now. Yeah. It's called the Lucaskew Doctrine. There's one actor who has to be in every Western during a period. Lucaskew was that for an earlier era, and now it's Ray McKinnon. And I can't wait to see who it is next.
Yeah. So, Todd is allowed to stay, even though he's from Prentice Town, but he's not really accepted. You know, there's some grumbling, but he is not hung on sight. But they can't contact the ship from Far Branch because they dismantled all their far-range communication equipment. So they are informed by the mayor that they have to go on to another settlement. That's right. There's more settlements on this planet. They have to go to a place called Haven. Which they should be able to contact the ship from there. We get a little bit of downtime. Viola reads Todd's mom's journal to him, which reveals the tragedy of Prentice Town. We find out what really happened. Who wants to... Elliot, I think you're champing at the bit here to tell us what actually happened at Prentice Town.
What actually happened was Mads Mikkelsen and David Aiello riled up the men riled up the men and convinced them to kill all the women. Mads Mikkelsen because he was ashamed of the things that of women seeing the way he thinks, and David Oyelowo because he's the kind of poorly characterized religious zealot who only thinks in terms of fire and brimstone all the time. Like, his thoughts are constantly like, a martyr is needed, blood for the sin, fire. And it's like, does he never think, like, I have to use the bathroom? I'm hungry now.
Is he from a Resident Evil video game? What's going on?
I will say that, like, as a character, he is a mystery until sort of like his final scene. Like, I think he snapped into focus for me a little bit more later, where, like, you know, part of the thing with the noise is he, like, could not distinguish it from the voice of God. Like, and he could hear the voices of the men. The women had no voices. So he says, like, oh, like, you know, to him, they had no souls. And it's a case of, like, I think we're meant to believe that because of the shame of women being able to keep their secrets and men's horrible thoughts on display all the time, like, the madness of society breaking down and the difficulty of this hardscrabble, like, colonist life, like... turned him towards, you know, even greater zealotry.
No, but I think it's like I would buy that character if he was an outcast from the village, because he is so off-putting and so insane that he should be Rorschach, basically. He should be someone who is on the fringes of this community. But everyone kind of like, even though they're kind of afraid and annoyed by him, he seems to hold a level of authority in the village that he's not dismissed. And it was I don't buy that character being nonstop religious violence in his mind that he is shouting at the world and everyone just being like, oh, preacher, what should we do? Okay, preacher, you lead
there's
the way.
There's definitely times where he's like leading groups of men and it doesn't, like, you get the feeling obviously from the Todd character that he mentions multiple times that nobody needs a preacher anymore. And obviously Mads Mikkelsen seems to keep him at arm's length, But I agree with you, Elliot.
I wonder if the idea is maybe that he was at one point more useful to Mads in, like, sort of keeping his power, and they were now they're bound together by the sort of the sin of what they did, killing all these women. I don't think we actually got into the fact before, or at least we didn't dwell on it, that the thing that makes the mayor special is he can control his noise very well. Like, he cannot let, you know, he does not let people into his thoughts, and he seems to have sort of mastered it enough that he kind of can control other men's thoughts. Like, his thoughts are so strong that they can overpower others.
Mm-hmm. And he's like the shadow.
Yes, yeah, exactly. There's a hint that he recognizes in Todd that same level of ability. Like, Todd does, early in the movie, Todd gets Nick Jonas to back off by imagining a giant snake lunging at Nick Jonas, and it's so real that Nick Jonas gets out of the way, and Mads is like, good use of your noise, Todd. And it's like, it's a terrible Mads. That's not a good impression. I apologize, Mr. Mickelson.
Gotham City will be proud of you.
oh, Batman, it's me, Mads Mickelson, also a vampire. this is my design.
Why is he revealing the fact that he's a vampire? Makes him susceptible to Batman's anti-vampire weapons.
And I'd like to play against the type. People think of me as just a great actor, but I'm also a vampire. And people don't know that, and explains why I don't go out during the day very much. But
this is Elliot's demo reel to be a guest on What We Do in the Shadows.
Go on What We Do in the Shadows as the Jewish vampire trying to hide the fact that he's Jewish, but it keeps coming out. He and Todd are special in that they're a little bit better at controlling their noise, but Todd is, his leaks out because he's young, and then he just always goes back to going, I'm Todd Hewitt, I'm Todd Hewitt, I'm Todd Hewitt.
Yeah, which is a very suspicious thing for him to be thinking. Like, it's just like, what are you hiding, boy? I'm Todd Hewitt, I'm Todd Hewitt. You seem to be saying your name to yourself a lot. Is something wrong? Do you forget your name?
So before they can head off to Haven, a posse from Prentice Town arrives at Far Branch. And they got their big laser blasters, and they got a bunch of guys, there's a standoff. But Prentice manages to start convincing the locals to just let him grab the girl. A guy tries to kidnap Viola, but she saves herself. She doesn't need Todd to help her. And then the two of them sneak off and hide in a barn for a little while.
This movie loves hiding in barns.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Father Ben, who has been forced to come along, is then forced to convince Todd to give up Viola to the mayor. Ben goes out and makes it appear, he uses a handy illusion to trick the mayor for a second, giving Todd and Viola enough time to escape. But not enough time, because the evil preacher chases them. There's a river chase. Manchi, the dog, who we have at this point come to love, joins them on a riverboat, and then in the scuffle,
on like a little rowboat. It's not like it's not like a paddle wheel riverboat. They're not riverboat gambling. It's not Maverick.
Oh man, but they were.
I changed my name to Mark Twain.
It's like we're on the run. We got to hide our noise. The game's Pharaoh, boys and girls. Sit down, take a look, please.
Well, belly up to the table.
That would be great. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen, which would be great. Nope, the worst thing in the world happens. The evil preacher slowly kills this dog that we love, and it sucks, and I do not like it. Okay, so then they escape, and they find the generation ship, this massive ship that the original colonists came on. It's crashed and like half buried in the earth, and Daisy Ridley's like, leave it to me. I'm an expert at exploring old ships.
It reminds me of Jakku and then Asterix. This is a reference to a character she played in a different movie.
So they find
Stan, I guess.
Synergistic Stan.
So they find a long-range comm unit, but they need to reconnect the antenna. So, of course, they need somebody to do some climbing. And Tom Holland's like, hey, that's my expertise.
I'm a character who climbs a lot in another movie.
So he climbs around like a spider.
They're like, what skills do we each have in Disney-owned IP? We'll use both of them in this scene.
Yeah. So he climbs up there and reconnects the comm unit. Meanwhile, the posse from Prentice Town show up and surround the crashed ship. The Prentice starts starts trying to coax Todd out by threatening his father Ben, who has been beaten and dragged along. And the preacher sneaks aboard the ship and starts attacking Viola. But then Viola uses some of her fancy equipment and totally roasts him. Hooray!
Yeah. But and also this is a scene where like I found this honestly kind of interesting because you can hear his noise and it's clear that like whether or not it's conscious thought or like his like the truth sort of like coming out from his brain, but like he knows that killing all the women was an evil deed, that like that he did this horrible thing and he wants her to kill him.
Yeah, he's like, attacking her not to kill her, but so that she will be forced to kill him too.
Yeah.
as a form of repentance or penance, you know.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. yeah, and as the mom as the papa said, you know, the preacher likes the cold, and this preacher probably does because he burns to death. So
yep.
Oh yeah, that's
I guess
a little
it
Easter
checks out. I'll put another
yep.
piece of yarn from
yeah. So if you can print
Cass walking over to the mamas and the papas, California Dreamin'.
Print out the California Dreamin', I guess single cover and put that with yarn attached that too. Yeah.
And outside the ship, we got Todd confronts Prentice. Father Ben gets shot and killed. Todd gets shot, and then the fight. There's a lot of like conjuring illusions. It's very Mysterio versus Spider-Man.
Yeah, everyone is using their illusion.
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. One and two illusions at a time. And they, you would almost call this a civil war. The opening track on Use Your Illusion
yeah.
2.
Yeah, mm-hmm, sure.
Use your illusion, you'll lose your illusion. So that's
yeah.
the problem.
That's true.
Then
yeah.
you have a spaghetti incident.
Chinese democracy?
So, no, that's all lies. Okay, so the...
so you're saying that using the noise, they both have an appetite for distraction.
Oh, no. Yep.
That's going to confuse someone so much uh-huh. who has no versing.
I mean, if they're not familiar with GNR, then they can figure it out themselves, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about the music video from November Rain like every other episode, right?
Lot,
and that fucking dude who dies through the cake? What's going on?
He hates cakes.
He's done that.
Or
he does that
them.
At every wedding. You know
thought,
that guy does
yeah,
that
that's
before.
His, they're like, don't invite him. He's going to die through the cake. Like
I promise I won't do it this time.
Yeah, yeah,
you're like,
yeah,
bring like, out the first, bring out the decoy cake so he'll dive through it. Then we'll bring out the real cake.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to invite him. Sadly, he's my brother.
Sadly, he died while diving through a king cake, and the baby cut right through his body.
Oh, that's what happened was the little baby figurine just split him in half whose racer hat is that in Mortal Kombat?
Kung Lao?
Kung Lao, yes.
Or like the thumb from Takeshi Kitano's character from Johnny Mnemonic, depending
sure, sure.
on what reference is better for you.
For this, which reference will better get the across the idea of a guy diving through a cake and a tiny baby figurine cutting him in two?
A monomolecular tiny baby slicing a man in half as he dives through a cake.
Yeah.
In a New Orleans themed wedding.
When it's raining.
Yep. Okay, so Todd conjures a Greek chorus of women berating Prentice, and then Viola shows up, the real one shows up, and blasts him with a pipe and knocks him down a hole. The end. The ship arrives, the posse runs off, Todd wakes up from his injuries, climbs out of his back-to-tank, he's on her ship, and the new colonists are gonna stay. Movie over, I did it. Perfect score for Stuart.
And one, you did a great job. And one thing I want to mention is that the movie does not have them kiss at the end. At the end, there's still that kind of hint of like, maybe they like each other now, but it does not go all the way to have them suddenly be in love after several stressful days together, which
and
I really appreciated.
That was very nice. Yeah, that was a good choice by the movie. Like, who knows, maybe, but who cares on the other hand.
And then, Stuart, do you want to summarize the 10 minutes of end credits that follow?
I wasn't paying that. I was paying attention, but I wasn't paying that close attention because I was just looking again for that. The no horses were.
I mean, you
injured.
Could summarize them by a bunch of words went by.
Yeah, but it's just one of those things. That. I was like, okay, there's still some of this movie left, right? And it cut to black, and I was like, I just could see on the timeline on the screen that there was a lot. There were 10 minutes left, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of credits. But that's the visual artist working on the noise.
Movie.
I guess it was a big movie.
Huh? And there was a ton of reshoots, so I would imagine. that were spread out over, because they, and it was shot on location, then it was shot in, a lot of the reshoots were done in Atlanta too, so I imagine a lot of different people got a crack at this thing.
Yeah, that's true.
So, guys, final judgments. Is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of like? This is a tough one, and I'm going to get a little controversial here. I kind of like the movie.
Okay.
We talked about it. There's a lot of flaws. There are even more flaws the more we talk about it. I think the biggest problem with it is, like, it is a potentially very interesting idea that has been flattened out into, like, a pretty standard YA screenplay. And I am very curious what the Charlie Kaufman version of it was before this version came out. But it has, like, Mads Mikkelsen is great. The stars, like, the roles they're playing, not particularly deep, but Daisy Ridley and Tom Holland are extremely charismatic people, and it was fun to watch them. I liked the look of the movie, and I liked that it, like, tried to have some ideas and tried to be saying something about something.
I mean, it's, but the book, the novels won a shitload of awards.
Yeah. I just think it's, you know, but it is, like, it does feel like it could be kind of a mid-level sci-fi series as much as, like, a film. I don't know. I don't, I marginally enjoyed it just because I think it looked kind of neat and was easy, went down easier than I expected, but I wouldn't recommend it necessarily for anyone.
Yeah, I don't think it was, I think it was neither good, bad, nor full out bad, bad, but it is very, it feels very generic to me. It feels like they did take, they were like, what's the like one gimmick of this thing? And now, like you're saying, they just kind of got compressed into the same kind of old structure that you've seen in a lot of movies, and you kind of know where it's going all the time. And it even, it looks very, like, the way it's shot looks very Hunger Games-y at times. And, like, it was the movie where I was constantly waiting for the moment where it was going to, like, surprise me in some way. And so, like, it didn't strike me as bad, but it is, I did find it dull because it was, if you haven't seen a lot of these movies, then go ahead. You know, if you've seen a lot of these movies, then you're going to be every beat of the way. You're going to kind of know what's going to happen. But maybe this is, you've never seen a movie before. Go ahead, watch Chaos Walking. I don't know. It'll surprise you.
It's going to blow your mind if you've never seen a movie before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I feel like, I don't know. I guess when it actually started moving, like, obviously I've already mentioned there's a few things that the movie does that I don't enjoy at all, involving animal death.
You don't enjoy seeing dogs drowned.
Exactly. I don't enjoy that.
Fair. That's fair. Yeah. We can disagree. No, I don't like it either.
So, good save. So I feel like once the movie gets going and I had to take fewer notes, I found it to be more enjoyable because I was actually kind of just watching the movie and stuff was happening. And it's like, it's, the locations are beautiful and the performances aren't bad. And I like at least some of the design decisions. But, like, that first chunk is fucking the labor that goes into trying to explain the setup. When I feel like you guys hit it on the head when you were saying that, like, if you focused on the Daisy Ridley character at the start and you saw it through her eyes, like, her perspective is so much more understandable.
Yeah.
So if you just if you showed that through her, it would make way more sense and it would feel a lot more fleet. But
I mean.
And I don't know if it's just because I'm, like, thirsting for, like, weirder sci-fi, like something like Raised by Wolves, where this feels just kind of bland. Maybe my taste buds have been so desensitized by stranger offerings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and also, it's like you with this many talented people on it, you're expecting something that's more than just kind of, like, the same old, you know? And it feels very same old to me. I think there's a version of this movie here. This is our new segment, Movie MD, where we're gonna fix it. We're gonna doctor up this movie. I think because I know that it is, a lot of people grow up in systems where they don't recognize the sin inherent in the system or the things being the lies being told to them until they're older. Because you only know what you grow up with. I feel like every generation has this moment where they're like, hey, wait a minute, like, capitalism's not good for most people. And then the next generation has to figure that out again because it's so baked into the way we live. But it is so obviously – the town is so obviously sinister that for Todd not to recognize it is ridiculous for the audience to buy. Not to, and it's like in real life I would buy it. In a movie, it's hard for me to buy it. And so if there's a version of this movie, I think starts with Daisy on the ship, and they're talking about how great this place is going to be that they've been journeying to for decades. She talks in the movie about how my grandparents got on the ship and my parents, and I was born on the ship, and they told me we're leaving for a better life, and they're telling her how great this place is going to be. It's basically, this is the American Tale version of it, I guess. And she crash lands on it. She does not know what the noise is. She's being confronted by guys whose thoughts are screaming at her all the time, and she's got to figure it out. And she kind of like has to team up with this kid who's like well-meaning but kind of slow when it comes to figuring out what's going on around him, you know, who's just kind of oblivious to anything outside mm-hmm. of his own head because he's a teen guy.
Why are you pointing at me while you're saying that slow
I'm just, part? And maybe he's painting miniatures a lot. I don't know. Maybe he's got a cat named Muscles. But anyway, so
cute.
The like that's a version of the movie that I think would be more interesting, but it's just not the version of the story that they're telling here. Instead, they go in a more traditional path, you know. Mm-hmm.
So I guess I didn't come up with it doesn't really fit our categories. There's elements that I kind of like, but also, you know, what I guess it would be a bad movie.
So was Chaos Walking Chaos Watching? No.
Or are we chaos balking at the prospect of recommending it?
I mean, we are chaos balking. I don't know why you're asking
that
question.
Dan, give us a chaos walking pun or play on
chaos
words.
Chaos stumbling.
Okay. Yeah, boom. That's your review title. Well,
took an hour, but we got there.
Yeah, great.
I mean,
yeah.
I had it before. I just didn't think it was worth saying.
Yeah, guys, let's just end our regular segment, Chaos Talking, where we talk about the movie Chaos Walking and move on to the next segment.
I'm going first. It's me, Jackie Cation.
Man, she's always this bossy. I'm Lori Kilmartin. We're a bunch of stand-up comics, and we've been doing comedy like 60 years total with both of us, but we look amazing.
We're working out. We drop every Monday on Max Fun, and it's called The Jackie Lori Show, and you could listen to it and learn about comedy and learn about anger management and all the things.
And Jackie is married but childless, and I'm unmarried but child full. So together, we make one complete woman.
Is that just what that one's going to end?
Yeah. And we try to make Kyle laugh just like that and say, oh, my God, every episode.
It's a good job.
Jackie and Lori Show, Mondays, only on Maximum Fun.
We are the host of My Brother and Me, and now, nearly 10 years into our podcast, the secret can be revealed. All the clues are in place, and the world's greatest treasure hunt can now begin.
Embedded in each episode of My Brother and Me is a micro clue that will lead you to 14 precious gemstones all around this big, beautiful blue world of ours.
So start combing through the episodes. Let's say starting at episode 101 on.
Yeah, the early episodes are pretty problematic, so there's no clues in those episodes.
No, not at all.
The better ones, the good ones, clues ahoy.
Listen to every episode repeatedly in sequence. Laugh if you must, but mainly get all the great clues. My Brother and Me, it's an advice show, kind of, but a treasure hunt, mainly. Anywhere you find podcasts or treasure maps, My Brother and Me, the hunt is on.
The next segment is a quick word from Squarespace, one of our sponsors for this episode. With Squarespace, you can create a beautiful website. Put your cool idea into a nice site everyone can see on the internet. You can blog or publish content, sell products and services of all kinds, and much, much more. And Squarespace does this by giving you beautiful, customizable templates created by world-class designers. Everything optimized for mobile right out of the box. A new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions and free and secure hosting. So go to squarespace.com/flop for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code FLOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
So, Dan, I had an idea for a website, and I was wondering if Squarespace might be able to help me with it.
What a pregnant pause right there.
they might.
Okay, now, we saw the movie Chaos Walking. We know that there's a problem guys are having where people can hear their thoughts, and it's called the noise. It's a problem that we're all having these days. Everybody's going through it. At the same time, look, kids need toys. and we don't want to make them out of plastic anymore. We want to make them out of biodegradable materials. So I wanted to start a website where we could hire people with noise problems and harness their ability to come up with new ideas to then design toys to be made out of more biodegradable organic products. And so that's my website, www.noiseboyssoytoys.com, would be your place to get toys made of soy made by boys dealing with noise. Now, you know, I know what Sparks once said, noisy boys are happy boys. So who better to design the soy toys that our kids need than Noise Boys? So noiseboyssoytoys.com is your place to buy soy-based toys made by boys dealing with noise. We're giving them something to do to take their mind off of the noise. And we're making better toys out of soy. So, Dan, you think Squarespace will be able to help me with this website? Now, to keep in mind, I don't have the company yet, but I want to set up the site so it's ready when I finally get the ability to make toys out of soy.
I think they will. Elliot, you broke up a little bit. I think you said something about Sparks. Did you say something about Sparks?
I did. I said that.
I'm going to see that Edgar Wright documentary on Friday. I'm very excited.
I think I'm going to be seeing it this weekend, too. It's the movie I'm most looking forward to this year. But, yeah, it's because Sparks, as you know from their album, Terminal Drive, on the song Noisy Boys, they say noisy boys are happy boys. So who better to design the toys of tomorrow out of soy than boys with noise? That's noisyboyssoytoys.com.
Thinking about it, this podcast is coming out on my birthday, so I'd just like to extend to you the chance to say happy birthday to me, guys, if you wanted to.
Birthday when we're recording this.
But it's the podcast is coming out on my birthday, so maybe...
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna do it, Elliot. I'll do it.
Okay.
Okay. So, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Dan.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Hey, Dan. Happy birthday when this is released, but not recording it.
I appreciate it.
Keeps a foot on base there. I like it.
Yeah,
Stuart, I think you have another message from a sponsor.
I have a word from another sponsor. That's
so
right.
So, Dan, was that an ad for your birthday?
Yeah, that was a little plug for my birthday.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, just drop the Cash App after the episode.
Yeah, Jordan, put that birthday noise sound effect in here.
I was sort of hoping nobody'd even remember my birthday.
Is that like a noisemaker? Is it the whole song?
Who knows?
So, hey everybody, Sport for the Flophouse is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped is dedicated to being the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. And Manscaped just launched their new fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. And, oh boy, I've been making some use. I'm sure Dan's going to be updating the Flophouse Insta with all kinds of pics.
Yep, it's going to happen.
It is a sleek, well-designed, and optimized trimmer. It makes shaving time much easier. Having used a variety of different trimmers over the years, this one is by far the best I've used. There is some interesting topography down there, and I found it to be very...
Non-Euclidean geometry?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Geographies.
Non-Euclidean geography,
either
too.
One.
That works, yeah.
Yeah. And also, I can't stress enough, there's also the area that I'm shaving, because I'm going to talk
Please
about my experience
about
with it.
It.
The area that I'm shaving, when I'm shaving, I don't have a lot of natural light going on down there.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot
of
shade being cast.
You don't have a ring light. You can
I don't
stand
think
over?
A lot of people have a lot of natural light around their genitals, Stuart. I think.
Wait, Dan, are you saying the sun doesn't shine out of your ass?
Uh-huh. Okay.
So one of the great features of this new trimmer is that there's a built-in LED spotlight, which I can't stress enough is very, very useful. And it also has a travel lock so that your trimmer doesn't just turn on in your bag when you're traveling around with your trimmer.
That would be embarrassing.
And waste all your precious bat. I don't care about the embarrassment. I just don't want to waste all my precious juice. So why don't you clean yourself up? You deserve it. You deserve it. It's great. With a Manscaped trimmer today to make your me time the best time.
Yeah.
So,
Dan,
have you been using your Manscaped trimmer?
Without going into too much detail, I have, in general, avoided doing too much trimming in the past just because I find it ends up being tremendously itchy. And I have not had that issue with this product. So I assume it's some sort of miracle design that keeps you from itching. That's it.
Hey, no. It's all good info. So you can get 20% off and free shipping by using the code FLOP over at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with your and free shipping at manscaped.com using code FLOP. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
And Elliot, I think you have a Jumbotron.
I do. I've got a Jumbotron. Here we go. Fake Presidents, a podcast that looks at fictional U.S. presidents from pop culture to see just how much fiction there really is, hosted by a former political consultant and a former speechwriter who do like talking politics. They just don't like talking actual current politics. In other words, it's for Flophouse listeners who wish Elliot would share even more presidential trivia while deconstructing the politics of films like Dave, Air Force One, and, of course, Machete Kills. Just look for Fake Presidents wherever you get podcasts. We're the only show with that title. I'm glad that they pointed that out. That's very helpful. Sounds like a fun podcast to me. I'm looking forward to checking it out.
So let us return to the non-sponsor-related portions of our show with everyone's favorite segment, is what I'm going to claim is true. Letters.
Okay.
That's a big claim. A big, big claim.
It's,
yeah.
It's probably untrue, but...
Probably.
This first letter.
You're hedging it. Okay.
This first letter. Yeah, I made a bold claim and then I immediately just
backed
decided.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is from Juniper, last name withheld.
Love Aye. The name.
And this goes, howdy, Peaches.
Hey.
I was just taking a listen to one of the episodes in your backlog mm-hmm. where Dan
Wait,
said that.
Wait, what if it was a bat log, though, and it was Batman's backlog? Or just a log Batman likes sitting on and thinking.
He has it on his utility belt. It's very hard to walk around with a log on his belt, but he does
But when he gets his best ideas sitting on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just taking a listen to one of the episodes in your backlog where Dan said that Stewart was yammering like a yam. I immediately had a laughing fit at my desk that lasted for at least a full minute, I assume, complete with laughter aftershocks or laughter shocks.
Still hurts to hear it.
When I thought about it in the car hours later, and even when I write this letter, my question to you three is this. What is the most simply inane line or moment in media that sent you into such an episode of disproportionate laughter? Keep it yammy. Yours always, Juniper. So, an inane line that sent you into hysterics.
Juniper Yammy sounds like the name of a character from that, was an Amazon show or Netflix show where it was like a murder mystery among fairies and elves? What was that show called?
Carnival Row.
Carnival Row, yeah. Juniper Yammy. Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't exactly an inane line, but I think on the podcast, I've said it on Twitter, the biggest laugh that a movie got out of me in 2020 was the moment in Mank when he said, I'm 43 years old. And I went, what? And it was, and seeing my wife's reaction to that line, it was hilarious. But I will say my big laugh line of 2021 is Rebecca Hall saying, Kong bows to no one. In Godzilla vs. Kong, because it's just a very silly line.
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, just for like a, I don't know if I would call it an inane line, but just the constant mentioning of official couples in Barb and Star is the funniest thing I've heard in 2021.
Extremely funny.
But then I would say for like an inane line, there's that line, I mentioned it before, but that line in fucking Tenet, where after having the reality that playing around with all this time shenanigans could lead to the destruction of the universe, that beautiful giraffe turned into a woman like Last Unicorn Elizabeth the Bicky leans back and says, including my son.
Yeah.
It was so fucking silly because it's like, okay. Yeah, no shit, dude.
So if we're talking about bad inane lines, then similarly, I think that in Ready Player One, where he's upset that the villain has killed his mom's sister rather than just saying his aunt is a pretty good one. But
that's like the line in the Happening where John Leguizamo goes, "I'm on a train going to the town of Princeton," which is like, if these people live on the East Coast, they know Princeton's a town. Like, I don't know why you had to explain that. The train doesn't stop at the college. Is that what you're telling me? But
yeah. But in terms of like more. Like, deliberately inane, like, a funny line that I am shocked at how funny I find it just because it's so stupid. I always go back to the classic look around you where they just go, thanks, ants.
Thanks. Which is, you know, just an encapsulation, I think, of the Flophouse's ethos when it comes to words.
Is that so. you mush them around.
Yep.
Yeah.
You mush them around in your mouth and they come out different. Anyway, so this second and final letter is a, it's a lot of wordplay as well. This is from Josie, last name withheld.
Josie N.T. Pussycats, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Josie writes, just wanted to say that a group of my 8th grade students is reading Dune for a student-led book group. I told them about the Doonies and McDonald's menu items, and they got inspired. Here are some of their ideas. Fremenims, chocolate-coated bite-sized candies. Binet and Jesserit spice cream on a Harkon.
That's good. The problem with Benemims is it's full of pee.
You got Junior's Mintats.
Or Fremenims.
Yeah.
Pumpkin spice latte. And Thopter with cheese. So
yeah, I think somebody on Twitter already mentioned the Gurney Haddock.
Yeah. I think Josie got on Twitter and I think it was maybe them who tweeted some extra ones after, but this was the this is the motherlode of.
I love
Dune
that thanks
items.
To the internet, we can reach out and connect with people who are also amused by the idea of Dune themed menu items at a fast food restaurant. That's the power of the internet. It almost makes the destruction of democracy worth it that the internet has made such a thing possible. So thank you, Tim Berners-Lee. Is that who I should be giving thanks to for that?
I guess. But hey, there's one more segment on the Flophouse, and that's where we recommend movies.
This is the if the show's a centipede, this would be the butt segment. It's the last
butt segment.
Yeah.
My favorite segment.
Because a normal centipede is made up of three segments.
One of them is the head.
It's called a butt, the head, and letters.
Somebody's been watching Wild Kratts, the PBS animal show. The centipede has three segments: head, letters, and butt.
Thanks, centipedes.
What if we had a centipede's letter powers? What if? Anyway, it's a show my kids watch a lot of.
Okay. So I would like to recommend. So I had the first in-person hang with some vaccinated friends to watch a movie.
In the world. Yours was the first one?
What? Not the first of everyone. The first time
since that you did.
Quarantine that I got together with
a group. But Dan, did they show you their vaccination cards or their Excelsior pass?
I guess they did not. But I am vaccinated. Okay, so they're just taking their lives into their own heads, hands if they're not. They all claim to be vaccinated. And we watched the movie Polyester, the John Waters film from 1981. Our friend Kevin, who was hosting it, had found enough Odorama cards for all of us to scratch and sniff at the appropriate times during the movie. They instruct you at different times during Polyester.
I remember watching that movie on TV when I was too young to really fully understand what the movie was doing. And the part where they're explaining Odorama in the beginning, I was like, what? Like, what am I? I don't have this. Was I supposed to get this? I don't understand.
Should I stop the movie?
Should I scratch the TV screen? What happened?
Should I just smell the things that are around me at the moment?
But I found it so funny. I've prior to that, I had only seen John Waters movies from Hairspray onward.
The more mainstream, the squarer John Waters movies.
Yes, and I've still not seen any of the truly transgressive ones, I guess, but Polyester is kind of a in-between movie, and I found it so funny. It is kind of in the form of a parody of like a Douglas Sirk style melodrama, a woman's picture, a weepy of the 40s or 50s, but it also is just kind of an all-out assault on suburban life. And it was funny to me. I was thinking about it. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you watch a movie from Hollywood that sort of takes down suburbia or whatever, and it feels sort of gross and smug because it's like, you know, at some level, this is the wealthy, making fun of this in their satire, whereas watching Polyester, you know, it comes from this like very like obviously queer kind of punk energy, like we may have affection for what we're satirizing, but we're also extending a middle finger at so-called like polite society that would exclude us and make us feel lesser. And so like, even though it's a very mean movie in that way, and the way it like really makes fun of everyone, it is full of joy because it's like, you know, like fuck you guys for like making us outsiders. And it was really, really, really funny and a lot of fun.
That's a great, and that's a great like movie hang, like first movie hang back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun for the family.
I'm going to recommend a movie that's a bit of a qualified recommendation, but I still enjoyed it quite a bit. I watched the new movie, I guess directorial debut, I think, of Simon Barrett. He's known for writing the screenplays for The Guest and Your Next, both movies that I hold in pretty high regard. And his new movie is called Seance. It takes place in a like a high-end girls' boarding school. And it has, you know, it's a bit of a ghost story. It also borrows a lot from, like, Giallo, which I find, like, more and more that I love movies that are more that are inspired by Giallo as opposed to actual Giallo. But, you know, that's something I'm going to have to take up with my therapist. yeah, it's, I don't want to talk about it too much because there's a mystery involved, but it's gory and funny and it, you know, like it looks interesting and the music's good. It's fairly light, but I like that kind of thing every once in a while. So Seance.
I'm going to recommend a movie that, hey, if people have been listening to these episodes in order, they can probably guess what country it came from and what film movement it was
which,
a result
which
of.
Which wave was it? Was it the old wave?
It was not if you're guessing.
The stew wave?
If you're guessing it was an old wave, you're wrong. It was the opposite
of
that.
How big is this wave? Because it seems like this wave has been crashing for a while on the shores of Elliott Beach.
This is, as new listeners will not know, that this is the Czech New Wave that I've been going through the Criterion Channel's Czech New Wave collection, which is a fair number of movies. I had seen probably about a third of them, and not a lot. It's like an 18-movie collection or something like that, and I'd seen like a third of them. So I'm almost done with them. There's only one
that's,
more after
that's
the
more than
I'm
twice
now.
As many. That's more than twice as many Saw movies.
Yes, it is. It's two Fast and Furiouses, basically, of movies.
And in a more metaphorical sense, it's worth many, many, many
more
Saw
movies. It's worth billions of Saw movies, yes. And so we're going to be surely reaching the end soon of my Czech New Wave recommendations. I have one today. I have another one I'd like to recommend in the future. There's only two movies left for me to watch in the series. I've started one, and there's just another one left. So, unfortunately, we're going to be bidding a fond farewell to the Czech New Wave in probably another couple episodes. But today, I want to recommend another one. This is the movie The Joke. It's directed by Jaromil Jarec, and it stars the actor Joseph Sommer, who plays a supporting role in my favorite Czech New Wave movie, Closely Watched Trains, which is one of my favorite movies. And I would recommend, if you've never seen a Czech New Wave movie, then I highly recommend Closely Watched Trains or Fireman's Ball, I guess. Or maybe Intimate Lighting. No, Close Watch Trains or Fireman's Ball. Those are the ones I'd recommend if you start with. But if you've seen those, why not try it? The Joke. It's the story of a man who, while he was a college student, it was still during the kind of Stalinist era, and after making a sarcastic reference to Trotsky on a postcard, he is kicked out of the Communist Party, kicked out of college, and sent essentially to decades of being in the worst unit in the army and then a labor camp. And now he is a man basically in middle age who has decided he's going to get revenge on the guy who presented the motion to kick him out of the party in college by having an affair with that man's wife. And things do not work out the way he thinks they're going to. And there are parts of it that are really funny and parts of it that are just kind of strange. But by the end of it, I thought there was a certain feeling of like the futility of revenge and also just how if you're in a system that stamps you as an outcast, young, you can never really fully shake that branding. Even after other people have stopped treating you that way, you can't shake it from yourself, you know. And I thought it was a really good. So it's called The Joke. If you have the Criterion Channel, it's on there. You might also find it elsewhere. But it's yet another Czech New Wave movie. Gotta love those Czech New Wave. As it was
like
advertised.
Like the, the bargain bin of a like a rest stop or something. You could probably
find
if it, right?
if you stop at like a rest stop on the highway, you look in the DVDs available, you'll probably find the joke in there. It's from 1969. You know, it's based on a Milan Kundera
it's
novel.
It's in the Czech New Wave section at the
It's probably on one of those discs. There's a couple different movies on. It's got Me, Myself, Irene, and Irene, and
and Hunt for Red October,
this,
And I'm just going to remind people of the original slogan of the Czech New Wave when it was first being brought to the United States in the late 60s. Check, 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 check this new wave. So that used to play on the radio and on television. So go ahead and check this new wave film, The Joke. Thank you.
Well, stuck the landing. I didn't know you could do it, but you did it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And thanks to our listeners. Thank you to Maximum Fun. Mm-hmm. Go to MaximumFun.org to check out all of the other shows on the Maximum Fun Podcast Network. The network that we are a part of provides us with great support. I'm sure you'll love other shows there. Maybe something like Fanti, which is also edited by Jordan Cowling, our editor and producer.
Best in the biz, Jordan Cowling.
Yeah, B in the B, best in the biz.
Thank you to her, but for now, for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
That's right. I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Czech New Wave fan, Elliot Kalin. Hey, keep flopping and keep checking.
Bye.
Oh, boy. Someone's got something in mind.
Oh, man. Who put a nickel on me?
We'll have some chaos walking today.
Oh, vielleicht.
Is there chaos?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.